Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
We told you last week that tonight we would have a return visit from lottery specialist Mohan Srivastava. Mo discovered that tonight didn't really work for his schedule, so we'll have him on sometime in the future. Our guest instead is a man we're going to call Cartwright. Cartwright is a guy who figures out how to beat table games mathematically and then runs a team doing just that. We'll be talking to Cartwright in a few minutes. In gambling news this week, Stanley Thompson, an alleged owner of online gaming's Pinnacle Sports, has been charged with more than 50 felonies in New York over things like illegal bookmaking, and somehow got those 50 felonies reduced to a guilty plea to the lowest level of misdemeanor, essentially getting off scot-free. Richard, in your book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, you interviewed Thompson. You never mentioned that he might be involved in owning an online gambling site in the book. Did you know about this then?
Well, yeah, I did. I mean, and it's not just any online site. I mean, Pinnacle Sports really is the premier sports book, I guess, in the world. I mean, everybody looks to them for the sharpest lines. And Thompson was one of the original computer group who used, computer models to beat sports betting back in the 80s. But, you know, I'm not an investigative reporter. I was, you know, doing an interview book, and the only way that I could get people to trust me to tell their story was to convince them that I was not going to say anything that they didn't want said, you know. So the ground rules were, if he did not want to talk about Pinnacle Sports, and so I, you know, honored that and you know, didn't put anything in the book about it. So, you know, I was happy to see him get off. He's a good guy. He was a backgammon player, and, you know, so I'm happy for him.
I have my own Stanley Thompson story. I started playing competitive backgammon in the mid-1970s at the Cavendish West Club just outside of Los Angeles. One of the better and more colorful players who hung out at the Cavendish was named Gabby Horowitz. Gabby was a charming street urchin and a prolific backgammon cheat who could make checkers disappear during the bear-off. He had a number of very clever and clearly illegal moves. Gabby always would claim that Stanley Thompson was his teacher. Thompson was an acknowledged expert at the game at the time, and apparently taught Gabby some backgammon theory in exchange for Gabby showing Thompson all of his sleight of hand moves. I've never met Thompson. My assumption was that Thompson wanted to know the moves so he could identify them and protect himself if anybody pulled them on him across a backgammon board. Gabby was a good player, but he had some weird theories and couldn't hold his own in a fair game against an expert. I actually had a crush on his wife, a UCLA law student named Marcia, who later on became Marcia Clark, who was the leading prosecutor in the O.J. Simpson murder case. Anyway, Gabby came to a bad end. There was some dispute with a business partner, and Gabby ended up with a bullet in his brain, alive but essentially a vegetable. Richard, I'm sure you remember Gabby.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Gabby had more moves than just the you know, the disappearing checkers in the Baroff. You know, another thing he would do is he would, you know, if he had a bad roll, he would just sit there in the tank and not move for minutes. And eventually, you know, the player, his opponent gets bored. And once it was clear the opponent was bored and not paying attention, Gabby would just make a completely illegal move and then pick up the dice quickly. And the player would say, wait a minute, that's not where the pieces were. And he was like, yes, they were. And that wasn't my role. This was the role. And basically it would turn into an argument that, you know, the other player could never win. But kind of the worst thing I remember about Gabby was he was playing in the World Championships in Monte Carlo against Mike Sankowitz. And I think it was the quarterfinals. And a friend of Gabby's came up to the table and said, do you want something to drink? And Gabby said, yeah, I'll have a Coke. And he asked Mike, do you want something? Yeah, I'll have a Coke. And the guy goes off and he comes back and he brings them their Cokes. And Mike takes a drink of the Coke. And, you know, 10 minutes later, he's being carried out of the room on a stretcher. And, you know, he had an overdose of scopolamine in him. And, you know, he forfeited the match, you know. And I don't remember what happened to Gabby. I mean, I don't think it came out, you know, that Mike had been poisoned until later when they analyzed the contents of his stomach. But, yeah, Gabby was not a nice guy and, you know.
Yeah.
What he deserved.
There's a Las Vegas connection to that story, which I guess we'll leave unsaid for now. Okay, let's talk to our guest. Cartwright is a software developer / computer scientist who enjoys analyzing games and organizing teams to beat casinos. Cartwright, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
One of the games you helped figure out was Card Craps, the key to which was realizing that a certain number of cards had to be held in a buffer, making the don't side a slight favorite. How did you come up with this realization?
Well, I actually did not come up with that realization on my own. I found Stephen Howe's website, and he posted about it in 2009. And I thought it was a really interesting concept. And through other means, I ended up conversing with Stephen about some other plays. And Card Craps came up, and we talked about it, and I had some other ideas, and we worked together on a slightly revised version of what he published. And that's basically how I got introduced to Card Craps and Stephen.
Yeah, he was on.
Now, were you already an Advantage player at that point, or was
yes.
that what got you interested in casino
no,
play?
So I started, my gambling career started when I was 12, and I was playing pool at little pool rooms in Illinois. And so, in fact, my first ever back off happened at a little bar. I was 14 and I won the weekly tournament 3 or 4 weeks in a row, and the old time drunks there insisted that I no longer be allowed to play. So that was that was the first time I was asked to leave an establishment. But I went from pool to blackjack and poker kind of as a natural progression once I was old enough to be in casinos. So I had been doing various things like that for quite a while. The team play didn't really happen until around the time I had met Steven, though.
Did you now, when Steven would play Card Craps?
Yes.
He would not play with an advantage. He would like he would bet $5 on the pass and the don't pass.
Yes.
And take odds on one or the other, and tip the dealers inordinately, and so he had an EV of about minus $30 an hour or something.
Right.
And he designed, I actually used his theories and did well at the game. And how much was luck and how much was skill, I don't know, but it was a significant win over several trips.
Right.
Did you play the game?
I did. So you are right about Steven. He's a character, and he is not really in it for the money. He's in it because he enjoys gambling and thinks it's fun to write software to analyze games. I agree on the software side, but when it comes to actually playing, I do not make a bet unless I'm pretty sure I have a decent advantage. I did play the card craps game. It went pretty well for me. And it's a game with a pretty high variance. And so doing well over a short amount of time has a lot to do with variance more than necessarily the edge in the game. But it had other benefits as well. So the casino that we played at was, they were pretty generous with their comp structure. And so we were able to also take advantage of some of that, even on nights where we lost. So overall, it was a very good play.
Yes.
We should mention that game is no longer available at that casino. So.
Correct. That's correct. There are some other card craps games that are out there. I know of at least one that is dealt in a very similar way, but their odds structure is quite a bit different. They don't let you lay as big of odds as the casino that we were playing at, and which reduces the opportunities down to the point that it's not really worth anyone's time. But there have been other card craps plays out there that were much, much bigger than the one that we played.
Now, targeting new games for flaws is one of the areas of your expertise. So the object is both to discover the flaws and exploit them before some other team successfully does it and the game gets eliminated. In general, how do you go about finding the games to exploit?
Right. So what I do is I visit the casinos that are in driving distance fairly often, and I'm very alert to anything that might be added, whether it's a new game or side bet or rule change or anything like that. Anytime I travel, I always visit local casinos. And then I also watch online forums. There are forums that are not really geared towards beating casinos, but that are about people who like to play in casinos. And I like to read those more than I read the ones that are about card counting or something, because a lot of times people will say, hey, I just played this really fun game. Does anybody know anything about it? And if it's a game that I haven't heard of, I usually start to take notice. And for, of course, my first stop is the Wizard of Odds. And if Michael Shackelford hasn't analyzed it, then I know I'm onto something that is new. And so from there, try to see if there's a way to get an advantage.
Now, we should mention that you are a software developer, so that you're able to run numbers yourself to determine
Yes.
whether there's a way to get an advantage of these games. I mean, because Shaq doesn't post anything about how to beat games.
That's right.
He may tell you the rules and what the what the basic strategy is, but that's pretty much as far as it goes.
He posts strategy certainly for some video poker. He has a strategy analyzer for video poker games and a few of the other games.
Yeah, and he has a couple of count systems for like baccarat side bets. But the thing that I like about
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say the thing that I find most useful about the Wizard of Odds is, well, first of all, as I said, if I find a game that's not on there, then I know it's probably fairly new. Second, it's also a great reference point, because whenever you're doing software for a game, the first thing you want to do is figure out the house edge so that you know kind of what you're up against. And that site is a great site for double-checking your work, basically. And I also feel like I have to say, back to Stephen. Stephen Howe was, to me, I guess, a mentor on the software side of gaming analysis. I'm a computer scientist, as you said, but as far as getting in and writing software to analyze the game, Stephen certainly taught me a lot, and we've collaborated together on a number of things, and it's fun. So we double-check each other's work sometimes, and it's a good situation.
Sometimes the manufacturer or designer does the math right, but casinos do it on the wrong number of decks, or they make another mistake, or blah blah blah. How often are you able to discover something like that?
So, at this point, I'm usually pretty good with my intuition. So when I see a game, I can usually have a pretty good sense of whether it's going to be beatable. It definitely happens, especially in the poker-based games, where it seems like knowing the cards that have been dealt would give you a very large edge, and it turns out it doesn't. That's probably the most frustrating one. But for the most part, especially like counting games, it's pretty straightforward, and sometimes it's very obvious that you would have an edge. And in the times that it's especially obvious, we try to work as fast as possible so nobody else gets a chance to play it.
Now, my
you have an example. You had a game where this happened, right? Where
yeah, that's right. So yeah, we had a game where, it was a side bet. So the main game had actually a pretty high house edge, but the side bet on the game depended on a dealer having certain cards in his hand, and it was just pretty obvious. Just anybody that knows how to count cards in blackjack would understand that this type of situation would. The frequency of that is very dependent on the composition of the shoe. And so that was one that we jumped on very quickly, analyzed it, figured out bankroll analysis, which is another big part of what I do, calculating risk of ruin and stuff. And, you know, we decided to attack that game pretty quickly. Another advantage was it was actually fairly local to me, so it didn't require a lot of travel, which is the case in a lot of games. We actually have to fly to the game.
Now, my first yeah.
So now that particular game, I want to go back to that game, but I was talking about, you had mentioned a case where the game was supposed to be dealt by a certain
yes.
number of decks, and you saw it being dealt with a different number of decks, and that specifically altered
Yes.
the edge on the game.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good example of the game maker had a flawless game. The game maker, it was actually kind of a fun game. It was a pretty complicated table structure and everything, but the game was very simple and fun. And the way the game inventor had it designed, it was not really vulnerable to anything. But the casinos that deal it, instead of dealing it from a single deck, they figure the shuffle time and everything would take too long, and so they want to get more hands in. And so they decided to deal it, in this case, out of the same type of shuffle machine as the card craps game was dealt out of. So the same vulnerability for card craps was present in this game, but fortunately for us, the level of edge that the player could get was much, much higher.
My first introduction to something similar to this was on a game called Royal Match, which can still be found occasionally. There's a different payout schedule for the single deck, double deck, and shoes. About 20 years ago, Stanford Wong wrote in his current Blackjack News that a local casino in Las Vegas was using the payoff schedule for the wrong number of decks. Although I drove out there as soon as I saw the item, the game had already been fixed by then. Wong shining a light on the game caused enough players to show up that the casino figured something was up and they rectified it.
Right. Yeah, that's one of those things where a lot of times you have opportunities that are sort of in the moment. And so anytime I'm traveling, I always have my computer with me and access to whatever means necessary to act on an opportunity that happens to present itself. And sometimes you do have to act pretty fast because there's other people out there doing the same thing. And also, you know, at some point the casinos are going to figure things out just based on how well the game is doing. We had one game that I found that where it was a similar thing. The pay table was wrong, and the pay table actually had an advantage off the top for a side bet on a continuous shuffle machine. And so
wow.
It wasn't a huge advantage, but it was an advantage. And it was one of those things where they just happened to have a much better opportunity, like three tables down. So we played that opportunity until we ended up being invited by security to leave. So we were never able to take advantage of the side bet game, but those things are definitely out there.
I just want to point out to our listeners, I think a mistake that a lot of people make is, you know, they go into a casino to count cards, and they head directly to the blackjack table, and they never stop and look at the other games in the casino. And, you know, often there are these opportunities, as you say, that are just worth way more than the game that they're there to play. You know, if they would just take the time to go walk through the casino and look at all the tables and see what's being offered.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I mean, counting cards in blackjack, that was something, like I said, I did that a while back. That would have been, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's one of those situations where your edge isn't that great and the casinos know all about it. So to me, it's not nearly as much fun as some of these other games where you can sit and play for hours and the casino wants to give you stuff for free instead of wanting to kick you out the door.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, for me personally, I recommend if anybody's counting cards and very serious about it, open your eyes and look around, and there's a lot of stuff out there that you probably haven't seen.
But you have to know how to play these other games, and there's
yes,
dozens or hundreds of them, and Exhibit CAA goes through some of them, but there's a lot of them, and so even though you see it, most players wouldn't have a clue as to how to go about attacking it.
I suppose that's fair.
Well, that's why it's really good to, you know, every team needs a numbers guy, you know.
Yep.
A guy who can do what Cartwright does and analyze the games and do it quickly. You know, I remember when I went to Moscow, it was like in the year 2000 or something like that.
This is Moscow, Idaho?
No, this was Moscow, Russia. And there was a very popular game there, you know, a variant of Caribbean Stud. You know, and I just, in my gut, you know, I just thought that this game could be beat. But at that time, I didn't know anybody that I could call from Russia and say, hey, you know, I just saw this game, you know. Can you run some numbers, you know? So, yeah, that's a really valuable skill to have, you know.
Yeah.
It's if you don't have it yourself, then, you know, it's good to know somebody.
Yeah, it's good to know somebody, and I'll tell you the game that Richard's referring to is a very, very complicated game to analyze. So that's one where it really helps to have somebody that's already got a lot of libraries built and already has quite a bit of experience. So
so let's go from you being a analyst and a player to being a team manager.
Yes.
Now, because sometimes it takes more than one person to beat a game. How do you recruit and train team members?
Yes. So I tell you, I've experienced a couple of different versions of this. So a very good friend of mine who I used to play poker with a lot, and actually we used to do pseudo teaming up at blackjack. We decided to get a little more ambitious and team up on some things, and he works in a casino, and he knows a lot of people that work in casinos, and it seemed like a very natural thing to recruit folks who are comfortable in casinos, are used to handling large sums of cash, already know how to play the game, look comfortable.
That sounds like a prescription for disaster to me.
Yeah, well, you know, it turned out it wasn't a disaster, luckily, because I'm a pretty good judge of character, and I was able to weed out a lot of the problems. But what I found was, first of all, schedules, this working schedule for people that work in casinos is a nightmare. So it's actually quite difficult to get everybody together at the same time without having to take off work. And when you have to take off work, your expectations for getting paid are different than if you are on your leisure time.
Yes.
And then the other thing is that, unfortunately, a lot of times people that work in casinos think that they're experts at casino games, and typically they're not. They might be experts at procedures, which is helpful to have around, but when it comes to actually playing the games, they typically have their own ideas for how things should be done, and maybe they'll see a juicy poker game and figure that's worth more to them than playing the game, and sometimes you're looking around for your team member and they're nowhere to be found. So I learned, we did pretty well with it, but I definitely learned that it was much better to have people that are smart and reliable and that you can schedule with and that you can teach than to have people that already know a lot of the casino stuff.
So you're looking for unemployed, honest geniuses.
Yes, or honest geniuses that have the same schedule as you.
Uh-huh. The genius part is easier to measure than the honest part.
Yes.
All right. Now, do you find casinos tend to be prejudiced for or against certain players? If so,
I do.
Which ones?
Well, this is a kind of a cornerstone to my recruiting habits, and it is without question that Asian players are able to get away with a lot more in a casino than white players. And I think that other ethnicities, other like black players and also females, an Asian female, an old Asian female is the trifecta. But the age of the player, the race of the player plays a huge part in what they're able to get away with in a casino, and the way casinos just treat you in general varies dramatically. It's also quite a bit different based on the race of the pit boss. Vietnamese pit bosses like to talk to Vietnamese players, and they like to give the crook eye to white players in my experience. And so this is something that we can take advantage of.
So you
right.
try to get old Vietnamese ladies on your team?
I would love to have an entire team full of old Vietnamese ladies. Unfortunately, right now, I have to settle for young Vietnamese men, but it still seems to work out.
Well, I have a source for Vietnamese ladies. Do you like manicurists?
I was having a conversation about this recently with a friend of mine, and our consensus was that if you are born Asian, it's worth at least an extra $1 million in your career as an advantage player to be born Asian.
Right.
You
and
gotta
you're
be
right,
a...
Asian female, I think, you know, is probably double.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the other thing that you can do is sort of take advantage of the natural cliques that society has, especially casino goers. I've not that long ago, we had a game that the heat was on and it was still worth playing. So it was a spotter game with a big player, similar to, you know, blackjack calling in a big player when the count is good. And I had my Asian big player, and I went ahead and sent out an older white guy that sort of looked the part of a degenerate gambler that had been there for a while. Like that was the role he was playing. And there was no logical person would think that those two people are there together. And apparently no illogical people would either, because the casino didn't put two and two together with that, which ended up being an interesting story.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, in that case, my instincts were right. The heat was very, very hot in that casino for that game. It was a brand new game. It had only been around for a few months, and it had very little action except for my player, who, you know, tended to bet the maximum. And so we knew it was coming down, and it did. And so the casino, you know, approached my player very politely, explained to him that he was no longer allowed to play table games, and so he left, and I was anxiously awaiting the call from my spotter, and it didn't come, and it was an hour before I actually heard from the guy. And this is a game where we were playing a side bet, and so I instructed my big player to actually bet on other players' side bets. Like, don't worry about making the main bet, because this is a casino that allowed sort of social gaming in that way. And so my spotter called me and I said, what happened? You know, what did the casino say to you? And as it turns out, the other player at the table was a young Vietnamese girl, and my big player obediently bet on her spot when he came over to play. And when the casino decided that they had had enough, they also came to the conclusion that this young girl was actually the spotter for the team. And so the casino managed to bar a civilian that was just there having a good time. And my spotter watched the whole thing happen. She came back 15 minutes later to meet up with some friends, and she was crying, and it had really ruined her night. And so it's a situation of the casino really just not doing things very well and not doing their homework, and also not seeing past their own prejudices in terms of what types of players are going to be playing together.
Well,
you know, you would think that the casino would look at that girl's player's card and yep. see, you know, how long she'd been playing, and that, you know, I mean, how many months or years she'd been playing and how much she had lost. I mean,
it's pretty wild, although it does go a little deeper than that. It turns out the signal that we had for signaling the big player to come over was a signal that is just kind of a casual way of sitting at the table, and she happened to be doing exactly that. So I was talking to my BP and talking about what could have, other than him betting on her spot, and as it turns out, she was sort of doing the signal to call him over, not knowing it, and so that may not have helped her.
As a casino, it's hooking two people together. It's sometimes an educated guess. And I would think that if I were a casino manager, I thought this team was really good, it's better to kick out somebody who doesn't deserve to be than to let a advantage player continue. I would think that would be the rule, but I'm not sure.
I tend to disagree. I think that if I ran a casino and I was ready to remove someone from my establishment, I would make absolutely certain that this was the right person to remove. I think that she was having a lot of fun. She was there with friends, and I'm sure now she's down the street enjoying and losing money at a different casino.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, as she was sitting there playing at a disadvantage the whole time, right? So
correct.
Even if you suspect that she was with the other guy, as long as she's playing at a disadvantage, right, why throw her out? You know, now you have a theory. Now you say, we think this is the girl, and you can keep an eye on her, but there's no need to throw her out until something comes along to, you know, to confirm your theory that she's the right one, you know, and,
right.
and she is playing at a disadvantage, so let her play.
Yeah, I agree. Now, it is true, too, that the spotter that I sent in, it was only his second time there, and I have no idea if that girl had happened to be at that table when we played it before. There's a possibility she's a regular there, and the schedule was really unfortunate for her. I'm not really sure, but it was one of those situations where I almost called the casino and told them that, you know, that they screwed up and they should probably call and apologize to this young lady. But
And you identify, my name's Cartwright, so if you ever see me again, yeah, good.
Yeah, I decided it, but I mean, we felt
casinos a little bad. Are very good about admitting that they made a mistake and apologizing. You know, that happens a lot.
Oh, yeah. Now, your team must have suffered big losses from time to time. How do you deal with that?
Well, it does happen. So for me, what we try to do is, you know, we calculate when we start a bankroll, we calculate, you know, how long it should take to get to our goal. And we usually triple that time, and we won't stop the bankroll until we've hit that hit that calendar time. But we did have a situation where we were losing pretty badly over a pretty long number of hours, and the game that we were playing no longer became available. And this was sort of while I was in that transition from using casino folks to non-casino folks for team members. And what I did, and I don't know, I mean, Richard probably has some ideas on how to handle this sort of situation, but what I decided to do was actually use the current bankroll as an investor in the next bankroll. Because our bankrolls are made up of investors and players, and we pay people based on percentage of the win, you know, based on the percentage of their investment or number of hours played, that sort of thing. And so what I did is I went ahead and just treated that bankroll as an investor in the next bankroll. So as the next bankroll won, the previous bankroll would start to grow. And, you know, the idea is hopefully we'll actually end up reaching our goal by investing in other plays. So far that's what I've had to do. But for the most part, we've been pretty fortunate, and over the medium run, not really had to get hurt too badly, except for this one.
Have you, in the losing bankroll that you had, did you have players who lost their incentive to play because it
Yes.
looked like they were not going to make any money?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, again, and part of this goes back to the type of people we're recruiting, but when we have plays that are really only good for weekends and people have to take time off work to play them, and they see that the bankroll is losing, so if they do end up getting paid, it's going to be a while, it's a pretty big disincentive to actually take that time off of work. And what that leads to is it's harder to get more hours in, which means it's harder to actually win and get that bankroll back up to where you want it to be. So, you know, it's one of those situations where, like I said, it's really important, I think, to have team members who have similar schedules. So when it is time to go play, you don't have to worry about people not being available. And you know, it's also a big, I guess, education. And so by recruiting people that aren't necessarily casino people but are smart, it's a lot easier to explain to them expected value and really drill in the fact that any given session or groups of sessions, those aren't necessarily going to be winners, and you got to trust the math. And for me, when you have people that aren't bringing their own stereotypes and expectations in, it's a lot easier to explain that and to have people actually believe it. So, and I'm very meticulous with my record keeping, so I can show past results and what sort of hourly rates you can more or less expect. So right now I've got a very, very good team of people that are extremely good, and most of them have invested at least a little bit into the bankroll, and they also play. So it's a good situation.
Have you had any skimming problems?
No. So far, no. Well, the biggest problem I've had is, like I said, I've had people where we're at the casino, but they're nowhere to be found. I've had a situation where one guy, he had worked all night long dealing, and so he was at this other casino, but he was so tired he just went to his car and fell asleep. I had another guy who, you know, decided that the no limit game in the poker room was just too good to pass up, so he figured we would understand and decided to play that game. That's the sort of situation that I've had to deal with. Anytime there's a player that's playing that I'm not absolutely sure of, I make sure that I'm present. And so I'm either physically at the table or watching from a distance, even if they don't know that I'm watching. And I keep very close eye on what people are doing, and thus far have not had any issues of skimming or theft or people accidentally losing money. It's been very good. I've certainly had issues. One of the biggest problems, too, though, is, and I still have this, is people keeping records themselves. So I make sure everybody knows that they should tell me when they started, when they stopped, how much they bought in for, how much they cashed out, all of those pieces of information. And I usually get the money right, but everything else is very much an approximation. And sometimes they're trying to reconstruct an evening from the night before instead of just recording things sort of in real time. So that's kind of a frustrating one, but so far so good as far as people being honest with the money.
One of the stereotypes among Caucasians in this country is that Asians tend to be more superstitious than Caucasians.
Yes.
You have a team of Vietnamese players. Are you finding that this stereotype reflects your team members, or is it an unjustified stereotype?
So I don't have a team of Vietnamese players. I have a team with Vietnamese players. So I also have Caucasians and other
ethnicities
represented.
Yes.
So But, you know, it's one of those situations where I guess the short answer is yes. And I had my big player once decide that the Panda 8 side bet on the Baccarat game he was looking at, he was just sure it was going to win, so he had to throw down $25, and he figured it would look good for the casino that he was betting this other game anyway, so why not? And it was just a very short little lecture from me and an explanation of exactly how much he lost the team in terms of expected value there and what that would cost over the years if he continued to do it, and he understood, and so I was able to nip that in the bud very early. And a lot of that has to do with making sure that I've got people that are honest and are really going to tell me all the little goofy things that they decided to do. So it wasn't too big of a deal. And he definitely – another thing is, you know, if you watch the very superstitious Asians that are big players, they do tend to root for certain cards and squeeze cards. If you're playing poker or any other game where it's handheld, it's one of the most frustrating experiences for me is having people at the table that take forever to look at their cards, because no matter how slowly you go, they're not going to change. But as it turns out, a lot of people really get a lot of thrill from that. And so I trained him to act in that manner, and it wasn't long before it didn't look like acting anymore, but that's okay. If he wants to squeeze his cards and it's more fun, it makes him look more natural, and it's good for us anyway. So,
well, except it costs you money because of the amount of time it takes.
Well, it's true, but in that particular play, it's one of those where it's not actually a bet that comes up very often. And so he's not actually making that many bets. So the number of times that he's squeezing those cards and taking his time, it doesn't add up to a lot of time. And in that situation, I think it fit well for him playing the part in the casino. But, of course, now he's no longer allowed to play in that casino, so maybe I'm wrong.
When your team really womps on a casino, maybe emptying the rack a couple times, causing several refills, how do you decide how much you can win before you better take off so that you can play again next time?
Right. Well, I can give a specific story to that. So there was a game that showed up, actually the game that I alluded to before, where it was meant to be dealt from a single deck, but instead the casino decided a continuous shuffle machine would let them get a lot more hands per hour in.
They're right.
And I'm sure it did. And so I showed up, and I had one other player there to help me keep track of everything that was going on, and we played within the first 3 hours. I had won every $500 chip, $100 chip, $25 chip, and $5 chip at the table, and they decided not to give me the $1 chips and to stop the game until they got a fill. And I won their fill, I think it was three times. And it was a situation where I was keeping the chips in my pocket. I had no idea how much money I had on me. And my playing partner kind of whispered to me, you know, he was making some bets, and he gave me a figure that didn't seem reasonable. It seemed like there's no way he had that much on him. So I excused myself and went to the bathroom, and I counted, and I had, you know, way, way more than I expected in my pocket. And it was a situation where I decided that we would stop when we were either asked to stop or we were too tired to continue, because no matter what happened after the end of that night, they were going to analyze that play and probably shut the game down. And as it turns out, I think everybody that wears a suit to work at that casino was standing around that table watching the game and furiously taking notes and wandering around the table and looking at me. But they never really figured out what I was doing at that night and let us continue playing. And it got to a point where we couldn't hold our eyes open anymore, and we decided to stop. And, of course, they shut the game down the next day. So it was a one-time thing, but it was our biggest win. So it was worth it.
Are you still welcome to play?
Has the game ever surfaced anywhere else?
That game surfaced in one other place, and it was dealt out of a CSM as well. But instead of using four decks, they were using six decks. And I didn't know that until I got there, and it was a very long trip. And that number of deck difference changed the play to the point that it was still plus EV, but not by nearly as much. And so I played, and I pretty much won enough to cover all of the expenses and a little bit extra, but overall, it was not that attractive of a play after that. So, and it was a very strange casino. I think the region had some specific laws about how much you could bet, and so the minimums were very low, and I didn't realize until my last night there that they had no problem with you asking other players to place bets for you as a way to get around those minimums. But I just didn't know that sort of regional rule. And so I wasn't able to get very much down. And so it's okay. It was still a pretty fun trip and saw some other interesting things at other local casinos around there that made it worth it.
All right. Very good. We are going to take a commercial break, but we still have some more questions for you. So please hang on for a few more minutes. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. In August, every Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, between 3 a.m. and 11 p.m., you earn 200 points and spin the wheel in their $400,000 Swipe, Spin, and Win giveaway. Prizes include up to $50 in free play, a free breakfast buffet, and the booby prize is $2,500, 2,500 points, which is worth $7.50. One of the possible prizes is a mystery gift. These are basically recycled giveaway items. You always have a choice of two or three items to choose among. If you don't like the selection, you can try again tomorrow and see if you like that selection any better. As long as you redeem your prizes by the end of August, you may do it at any time. Although there is a randomness to the wheel and your prizes will vary from day to day, in general, the bigger your mailer, the bigger swipes you'll get. If you're a brand new player, count on the 2,500 points or the free breakfast buffets or maybe the mystery gift. If you get $75 in free play a week, which is as good as it gets at that casino, you're going to get $50 in free play on most of your swipes. We'll be starting up video poker classes there in September on Wednesdays. We'll talk more about them as we get closer. At the Palms, they have 7 p.m. drawings each Friday in July, ending with a drawing tomorrow night, which officially is in August, where 15 winners share in $10,000. Starting after the drawing tomorrow night, you can begin earning tickets for the August $40,000 drawing. It's called It's Summer Drawings. It's basically the same format, but now only 10 winners share in the 10,000. It doesn't affect your EV. It does affect the variance a bit. You earn 5 times entries Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. to midnight, and 2 times entries all day Sundays and Tuesdays. PFP, play for points, or play for prizes, Monday through Friday. Tomorrow ends up you can earn up to $200 in TJ Maxx cards, which requires 80,000 coin in video poker or 10,000 coin in slots. For the 2 weeks beginning Monday, August 4th, the main prizes are gift cards from CVS. And for the last 2 weeks of the month, the main prize giveaway are cards from the Albertsons Market. There are free prizes given away on Thursdays if you earn 50 slot points or 250 video poker points. Earlier, we announced free video poker classes at the Palms in August. They have been canceled. Sorry about that. VideoPoker.com remains the best place to practice a very wide variety of games, including Quick Quads, Ultimate X, Extra Draw, Frenzy Poker, Hyper Bonus, many others. Often these games are the best returning games in a casino. This week's contest is Dream Card, and here it's played in the triple play format, although you can find it in other formats as well, such as 10 play or spin poker sometimes. On Dream Card, you get periodically the fifth card is whatever you want it to be. And so you pay for this by 10 coins per line. So you get a lot more royals, a lot more four of a kinds. But you pay 10 coins for each line. Now, the frequency of the dream card depends on the game. In Jacks or Better, for example, you get a lot of dream cards because all four of a kinds return 125 coins. So even if you get dealt quads, it's not worth that much, relatively speaking. In Triple Double Bonus, on the other hand, you get a lot fewer dream cards because of the much higher payout for quads, including up to 4,000 coins for aces with a kicker. The frequency of the dream card was selected so that it's always higher EV if you bet the full 10 coins than it is to play 5 coins on the game. Plus, you don't need to learn a new strategy because the strategy is identical to that of the base game. All right, let's go back to talking to Cartwright. Are you hireable to mathematically analyze games for others? And if so, how do our listeners get in touch with you?
I am not hireable, but I would say that Stephen Howe is your best bet. I think he's very good. He's very fast. His rates are reasonable, and he's going to be a lot faster than me at it and probably more willing. So my suggestion would be to go to his website and reach out to him.
So his website was discountgaming.net?
I think it's discountgambling.net, yeah.
Discountgambling.net. And then he might have a new website now. But
yeah, he's been pretty obsessed with bike riding, I think.
All right. Now, there are some beatable side bets in blackjack.
Yes.
Do you ever decide that, although this particular side bet might be beatable, but it looks too much like card counting, so you avoid it because casinos are hyper alert for card counters?
No. So I definitely avoid counting the main blackjack game, but I enjoy counting the side bets. I've been fortunate in that the very, very vulnerable side bets I've found have been in casinos that are particularly clueless about just about anything and been able to get away with the most obvious plays you could possibly imagine in terms of betting the table minimum on the main game, and then when it's good, betting the table maximum on the side bet across every spot at the table. And
does that look pretty obvious, do you think?
It seems pretty obvious, but when you're at a table where the dealer is allowed to pull chips out of her rack to make bets for herself, it's one of those situations where you figure this casino is pretty open to just about anything. So,
all right, we got 1 minute left. The dealer makes bets for herself?
Absolutely, yes. I've been at casinos where both blackjack and baccarat, where the dealer, I saw one baccarat dealer run a martingale up to having his entire rack out on one spot, and he hit it. So he was able to get his money back. But those are casinos
chip?
That are not very sophisticated.
He was
You're saying that he was betting his chip money?
Yeah, so it's a situation where the dealers, I mean, I know the casinos pretty well, and the dealers are actually, they take a tray, they walk around with a specific tray that's assigned
all
to
right,
them.
All right, we're going to have to finish this story next time. Thank you very much, Cartwright. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.